It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last week, House Republicans passed a major budget bill that would make sweeping changes to tax revenue and spending in the federal government.
The changes include funding cuts and new eligibility requirements for federal programs like food assistance and Medicaid. The bill would also eliminate taxes on cash tips and overtime pay and increase the national debt ceiling.
The legislation passed by just one vote. Now it's in the Senate's hands. Because of the process that's being used, it can pass without Democratic votes, but it is expected to face opposition, even from Senate Republicans like Ron Johnson.
I talked yesterday with Republican U.S. Representative Brian Steil, who represents Wisconsin's first congressional district, including Janesville, Racine, and Kenosha. Briefly, big picture, what elements of this big bill would make the most significant changes for Wisconsinites?
It continues to build on President Trump's success in securing the U.S.-Mexico border. That's essential. It invests in the United States military at a period of time where we face challenges around the globe. And it does that while saving money at a period of time when our federal government is spending beyond its means. And the most important piece is probably making sure that there's not a tax increase on the American people, giving an opportunity for further growth in our economy, which means good and better paying jobs for people across the state of Wisconsin.
Now, in the House, this was a tightly negotiated bill. Were there things you had hoped for that didn't get in there or that you hoped against and did get in there?
Well, you know, at any time when you have a narrowly divided majority and it's difficult to get anything done in Washington, you know, no bill is absolutely perfect. But I do believe the final text of the bill moves us in the right direction. I think we're going to have to continue to look at additional savings to make sure that we get our spending under control. But this bill, as drafted, is unquestionably a step in the right direction.
It's on to the Senate now, and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has been critical of the bill. He told Jake Tapper on CNN that it doesn't do enough to reduce the deficit. Here is a listen.
And I'm sorry, the House bill would probably add, I've calculated $4 trillion. You're saying you have these independent analysts saying it's $3.3 to $4 trillion. I agree with that. We have to reduce the deficit, and so we need to focus on spending.
Senator Johnson saying, hey, this does too much to increase the deficit. What do you say?
Well, I would agree that I think we have a broader and further opportunity to continue our work to get spending under control. That said, I do believe this bill is a step in the right direction. It doesn't accomplish as much as many of us want, but that's sometimes how the negotiations play out. And so we'll see how the Senate amends and adjusts this bill before we'll ultimately get a second vote on it prior to it becoming law.
Another point of criticism, this coming from Democrats. I talked to your Wisconsin Democratic colleague, Gwen Moore from Milwaukee, yesterday. She made the case that, hey, the big deficit booster is extending those 2017 tax cuts. That's where the big jump, she sees it in the deficit coming. What do you say to that angle of criticism?
Well, I think as we look at the tax provisions, what we really see is a continuation of the tax policy that was set in place in 2017. And so when the Democrats had full control, they decided not to alter the tax policy. And what we're doing is really doubling down on that and continuing on not putting forward a tax increase on the American people. Sometimes the accountants and the actuaries will tell you it does X, Y, or Z on the revenue side. But the bottom line is the overwhelming majority of this bill is making sure that we continue the tax rates as they are and we don't increase them on hardworking families.
Representative Moore also pointed toward the Congressional Budget Office read on this, looking at the distributional impact of the whole package, saying, hey, you look at the top 10% of earners in America, they benefit in the percentage of the income they gain. You look at the bottom 10%, they get hit, including by social safety net programs they'll get into. That big picture, I assume come election time, the attack for Democrats will be, hey, this was a giveaway to the rich at the expense of the poor. Your response to that?
Yeah, it's nothing new to hear class warfare arguments coming from the left at a period of time. We're trying to grow the economy. And this bill has increases of deductions for seniors up to $75,000. And so making sure that we're focused in on hardworking families is the ultimate goal. And I think what we saw, if we look back when these tax policies were originally put in place, in 2017 was significant growth in the economy, in particular, real wages rising, in particular for the least amongst us. We saw actually high wage growth, in particular for Blacks, for Hispanics, for Asians, women, and veterans, above the median. That's all positive. And so doubling down on these tax policies and making sure that we are allowing individuals to see their real wages rise is the end result that I think we'll see when these tax policies are put into place.
Talking to Republican U.S. Representative Brian Stile from Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District about the budget bill now headed to the Senate. Medicaid, a big point of contention, including among some Republicans in the Senate. Some cuts coming, likely removing some people from Medicaid, including Badger Care Plus here in Wisconsin. What do you think of what came out of this bill when it comes to Medicaid and how it could impact Wisconsin?
There's a lot of fear-mongering on this topic, and so I think it's important to drill down as to what changes were made. What changes were made was primarily putting in place work requirements for able-bodied, childless adults of working age, saying that if you are on the state-funded or the state and federal-funded program, we want to make sure that you're working or looking for work in a process to earn benefits. That's not true, of course, where we're strengthening the program for the program that was originally designed for children, pregnant women, permanently disabled adults. There's no changes for those groups. What there are changes in making sure that we're helping lift people up and into good and better paying jobs and into self-sustainability. And so far too often we analyze our social safety net programs simply by their inputs, how much money we're spending. I'm of the belief we should be measuring them also by their outputs. How are we doing in helping people live out a healthy life? And I think these work requirements actually move us in the right direction, making sure we're protecting the program for those it's truly designed for.
There have been some arguments that things like work requirements, more regular re-sign-up requirements, things like that, could effectively push people off by red tape. Hey, maybe they should be entitled to the program as it stands, but because there are more hoops to jump through, they slip through the cracks. Is that a concern?
I think what we have is a real opportunity to make sure that we don't allow that to occur, that we strengthen the safety net program for those it's truly designed for. And so for individuals that it's not designed for, individuals that will choose to go and get a job, in particular jobs that have good private sector health insurance, we should be celebrating that. And so I think we can always make sure we're strengthening the program. It's a state-run, federally funded or federally funded shared program. And so there's going to be an onus on the state to make sure we get it right. We do the same thing in many other programs, including, for example, unemployment insurance. And so the state has to make sure that we're getting this right. That's true. But I'm of the belief that we're capable of doing that within the modern technological age.
We've heard from some rural hospitals around Wisconsin saying they're worried, is this going to hit their Medicaid reimbursement rates? Some of them are already struggling to stay open, also pointing toward some Medicare grants that have been stopped, at least temporarily, by the Trump administration. Your thoughts on the state of rural hospitals and what federal policy can do to help or hurt them?
We need to make sure that we're strengthening our rural hospitals. We've had challenges in the state of Wisconsin and some of our more rural areas where hospital access is a unique challenge. The bill that passed through the House does not alter the FMAP. It doesn't alter that reimbursement rate that was discussed from different parties for different reasons. Some people wanted to increase it, some decrease it. At the end of the day, the FMAP did not change. But the bottom line is we need to remain focused on making sure that we're having strong rural hospitals across the state of Wisconsin so that everyone has access to good quality health care.
Wisconsin, the state government here in a budget cycle right now, looking at things like SNAP, the food assistance program in particular, maybe some Medicaid concerns at the state level that some of these costs are going to get offloaded to the state that are now currently handled by the feds. What would you say to Wisconsin policymakers?
At the end of the day, nationally, by having a fully federally funded program, a lot of states began to very poorly manage the SNAP program. This is all about strengthening the programs for those that it's truly designed for. And so a 5% cost shift from the federal government to the states, what that does is have states have some skin in the game. Wisconsin on the whole does a reasonably good job. Our error rate is reasonably low, although there's still room for improvement to make sure that the federal government or taxpayer dollars writ large are not being unnecessarily spent. And so the question here is, how do we get states to truly have some skin in the game, to make sure that they're running the checks, to make sure that people aren't abusing the program? Some states have been really egregious in this regard. And so making sure that all states have a little bit of skin in the game, I think will actually, at the end of the day, strengthen the program for those that it's truly designed for.
Now, the bill is in the Senate. We have Senator Johnson from Wisconsin saying he may have enough Senate votes to block this and demand further spending cuts. Senator Josh Hawley, another Republican, before the final version of your House bill came out, said, hey, don't do too much Medicaid cutting. I'm going to be watching that closely. This faces a rocky road in the Senate. For you, if it comes back to you in this reconciliation process, you're voting on it, what kind of change is too much change for you to still support a bill when it comes back from the Senate?
Well, we'll see how the Senate ultimately moves forward on the bill. I've talked to a number of our Senate colleagues about what they would like to see. I do believe that we have to continue to work to make sure that we're getting spending under control. Again, this bill doesn't accomplish 100% of everything we need to do to get spending under control. That said, it's unquestionably a step in the right direction. So we'll continue to watch how the Senate amends this bill, and we'll look for that final product and make an assessment when it's finally passed in the Senate.
And finally, this bill we're talking about, it's taken a lot of the oxygen in the room. Are there other priorities on your agenda that you're hoping to advance now that this thing has been handed over to the Senate?
You know, there's a number of things that is on our plate from our National Defense Reauthorization Act, which is our defense policy bills. The Farm Bill is a continuation of work that we need to make sure we get right for our farmers. And in particular, in my space, I'm uniquely working to make sure that we get legislation and digital assets to make sure we're doing two things, protecting consumers, but also making sure that the United States can outcompete the rest of the world, and including China, as we enter kind of the Web3 age.
Representative Style, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
That was Republican U.S. Representative Brian Style, who represents Wisconsin's 1st congressional district. That includes Janesville, Racine, and Kenosha. I talked to him yesterday about the federal budget bill that passed the House last week.